One in 160 pregnancies result in a stillbirth here in the United States. That's according to the March of Dimes. And healthcare professionals estimate that 25% of pregnancies result in miscarriage. And with those numbers, it is highly likely that you or someone you love has experienced this kind of loss. So what do you say when this happens? How do you grieve if it happens to you? Earlier this week was Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Day. So today, we are going to talk about this issue, and we understand it is a hard and for many emotionally difficult topic to discuss. But we are hoping to give everyone some tools to better understand this process. Joining me live in studio today are Debbie Ketchum, St. Luke's Senior Director of Perinatal Palliative Care, and Leslie Gunnarsson, Program Manager for St. Luke's Palliative Care. I want to welcome both of you to the program.
Thank you very much, Jenna.
Thank you so much.
This is a tough topic. There is a ton of emotion around this. So I thank both of you for coming in and being willing to talk about this. And I want to basically kind of start with just terminology, because we hear the terms miscarriage, we hear the term stillbirth. Can you explain to people what those actual definitions are? Maybe, Leslie, you can do that.
Yeah, I can do that. So a miscarriage is a loss that is less than 20 weeks or 350 grams, so the smaller, earlier babies. And then stillbirth is a baby over 20 weeks up to term and over that 350 grams.
And that's how it's defined.
That's how it's defined, yeah. Both of those losses are not live birth losses. So if a baby is born alive and passes away shortly after that, then we categorize that as a neonatal death. So it's looked at a little bit differently from a clinical perspective.
And is that where you guys come in? Because a lot, especially we have a phenomenal prenatal and postnatal, but also a preemie center in our valley, both at St. Luke's and St. Al. So we see preemie babies.
Correct.
But not all of those babies end up surviving. And that is put into this whole issue when we talk about that miscarriage, stillbirth, infant loss, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how does St. Luke's go about dealing with this? And what I mean by that is the acceptance of how parents are allowed to grieve this process has really changed over the years. And maybe, Debbie, you can talk a little bit about that.
Well, speaking from the St. Luke's perspective, we do have high-risk nurse navigator, and we have the Leslie's position, which she contacts patients if they know ahead of time and helps walk them through the journey of pregnancy and pregnancy loss, and even connecting with their baby before the loss, before the birth, and even supporting the staff caring for the families after the birth of the baby, and how to take care of the baby at the bedside, and helping the staff take care of the baby and the families at the bedside. We also have butterfly rooms at our facilities, such as Nampa, Boise, Meridian.
And talk about what a butterfly room is, because some people may not be aware of that or know what that
is. So we came up with a butterfly room so family members didn't have to be in the waiting room to grieve or celebrate the baby. Some people like to be with a child in a separate space other than the patient's room, just to be with the baby. And that's where we'll do footprints. We'll do memory boxes. We will take some pictures, and they'll get to have a sacred space with the baby and the family members.
But this hasn't always been the case, right?
No.
I mean, really, where do you think that change happened? I mean, I remember when I was in the eighth grade, we had a family friend who lost a full-term baby. His name was Joshua. I remember it. But there was nothing like that. So where has that change happened within healthcare?
Yeah, I think clinical care has evolved. I started as a nurse in 92, and I think it's just evolved organically with families really needing this kind of care and caregivers recognizing that even though, you know, a stillbirth, you don't really feel like you can say to your friends that you had a baby, because the baby to them never really was alive. But caregivers recognizing how important these babies were to these families and really needing to honor that, recognize that life, acknowledge that life, call that baby by name, give these families time to be with their baby instead of really hurrying through all of those clinical aspects that we feel like, you know, we have to do to care for the mother, but really slowing it down and seeing the necessity for them to slowly enter the grief process and sit with them and allow them to go through this and, as a family.
Yeah, family members even came up with the idea of the cuddle cot, which
right.
allows the baby to be in the room longer and help them kind of be and recognize the baby with them and help them go through the grief process. And Leslie can speak to the cuddle cot and the donations that we've had.
Yeah, and Leslie, I really would love you to talk about this because I think sometimes people aren't aware of what this is and the fact that we do have these in the Treasure Valley, and they are critical.
Yeah, so this is kind of a newer element to our perinatal palliative care program, and we are still waiting to get one for Jerome and Wood River in our system, but all of our other hospitals have these. And this is basically just like a little baby bassinet, but it's set up with a cooling system that helps to keep the baby's body cool so that decomposition happens a little bit slower, and it allows the family more time to do things like take pictures. Maybe they're waiting, you know, maybe this was an event that they really weren't prepared for. They went to a doctor's visit and found they had no heart tones. Mm-hmm. And so they're waiting for grandma and grandpa to come, and they really want to give everyone time to see this baby and have time with this baby. So the cuddle cot really just slows down that process. And if they want to have the baby in the room with them for 24 hours, then they can do so. And there's no rushing through this process with them.
And don't you also put things on like the patient's door so that people are aware of,
we do.
Of what's going on? Because having had babies myself and being at St. Luke's, I mean, that maternity floor is a pretty celebratory floor.
Mm-hmm.
But there are things like this that happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a little butterfly magnet that goes on the kind of the edge of the door jamb, and it's a magnet, and it just really alerts the caregivers, the people that are bringing in the mother's lunch, that this family has experienced a loss. And most people that work in the hospital are also enjoying coming to that floor to celebrate. So it just helps people to be more mindful when they come in the room to bring lunch to, know what they're walking into to be more compassionate with the words that come to them and the things that they say to these families.
And Debbie, how does your role play into that with the perinatal palliative care? Because some people may not be aware palliative care is like, you know, end of life care, making someone as comfortable as possible. And that happens even with babies.
Right. I think my role is really supporting Leslie and also supporting the staff throughout the whole system to help get the training that they need to, because it does take specialized training for the words that they say with the families so they don't get more trauma through their loss, because it is really traumatic. It is very impactful to these families, and we do need to say the right things. We need to support them emotionally, and there is a lot of emotional support that's needed with the staff. People tend to think of the OB floor as a happy, wonderful place. And a lot of times it is, but it can be the hardest place, not only for our families, but also for our staff. And how can we keep the staff and our providers in that specialty, even with these hard, hard times? And also our ED departments go through these loss with early miscarriages. And we reach out and try to support them through how can they give the best care in those early losses and try to make a supportive environment for those too, especially in our critical access hospitals who see those patients who have an early loss and encourage patients to come back to their facilities again when sometimes it's pretty traumatic to even walk into the doors again when they go through a loss.
I'm speaking with Debbie Ketchum, St. Luke's Senior Director of Perinatal Palliative Care, and Leslie Gunnarsson, Program Manager for St. Luke's Palliative Care. We're talking about pregnancy and infant and stillbirth loss, having that been the Awareness Day on October 15th. And I think you bring up a good point, too, about early loss, because as we know, we talk about this, you know, don't tell anyone until you're 12 weeks along, right? Mm-hmm. Most miscarriages happen within that time frame. So then you know you're pregnant, but then if you have that loss and if you haven't told anyone, then how do you go about saying, by the way, I'm grieving?
Yeah, but this happened to me.
And this happened. And there is a true sense of loss for many people.
Right. And everybody is different. And it's important to honor how they want to go through that journey and let them talk about it. They want to talk about it and be supportive to them.
And getting back to what you said about staff, because do you have special things in place for staff when they are, you know, seeing this? And they're, because as you said, I mean, I didn't even think about the people that bring them lunch. I mean, there are all of these staff members who interact with these families when something like this happens. And that has to take an emotional toll.
Yeah, it does. And we include that in part of our onboarding training for the staff that are hired to St. Luke's. And we include this content also because a lot of them have had a loss of their own. And so they're coming to this workday with some amount of history that even makes that interaction with that family a little bit more emotional and more tenuous for them. So we want to be mindful of that and sensitive to the staff's needs as well. And I think that really sets us up for some better interactions with everyone who works within the system with each of these family members.
And getting back to the cuddle cots, these are donated, correct?
These are donated.
So tell me about this, because these are so needed, but they are expensive.
Mm-hmm. They are. They're around $2,700 for a full setup. There is a foundation in Idaho run by a mother who lost her triplets, and she's been doing the fundraising, and it's called Little Joys Foundation. The new cuddle cot that we have kind of coming down the road for Wood River is through a foundation grant. So we're just sort of doing it with whatever is available, but Little Joys has been really, really, really pivotal for getting us supplied.
Did it change? Did you see an emotional change when you got those cuddle cots? I mean, when these families got that opportunity?
I think most families just really weren't aware that this was an option for them and that this could extend the time that they could spend with their baby. And so, you know, most parents, once you talk to them about it, they think it through, and then they realize they don't have to be hurried. Not every family wants this. Honestly, the cooling process can be a little bit difficult for some families, and they really don't like a feeling that their baby is cold, and that really makes it all that much more real to them, and so that can be even harder. So I think it's just one more of those elements that we can do to honor choice for them, and our role is really to honor their journey and give them all the choices that we have available to us for providing care to them, and then really allowing them to tell us what feels like it's going to work the best for them, and then supporting that.
I want to thank both of you for coming in today. It is such a conversation we need to be having, but a hard conversation. So I appreciate your time. My guest today, Debbie Ketchum, St. Luke's Senior Director of Perinatal Palliative Care, and Leslie Gunnarsson, Program Manager for St. Luke's Palliative Care. Earlier this week was Miscarriage and Stillbirth Loss Awareness Day. We understand that this can be a difficult topic for many people, but we do feel it's something that we need to give voice to, and here's why. Mental health experts say that the intensity of grief is not tied to the length of a pregnancy, but to a lot of other factors, including how long it took to get pregnant, how much that baby was longed for, the context of a woman's reproductive story, and how much support a couple receives after a loss like this. Joining me live in studio are two Treasure Valley parents who have experienced this loss, Jake Engelhorn and Courtney Wyatt. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you.
I would like both of you, if you could, just start and tell me about your particular losses. And Courtney, maybe we can just start the conversation with you.
Yes, I have three children. One of them is a happy, healthy 8-year-old boy. But when he was almost 2, I was pregnant with my second son and went in for the 20-week ultrasound on May 30th of 2012. And found out that my baby had a lot of abnormalities, and it turned out he had trisomy 13. Mm. And so he was born on June 7th in 2012. And but my husband and I wanted to keep trying to grow our family. And so we got pregnant again in 2013, but then I had a miscarriage at 9 weeks. No heartbeat was found. And so we kept trying again, but then even after that, had secondary infertility. And so, after a few years of trying, we decided that it was enough of an emotional roller coaster,
yeah.
And we're happy with the one healthy child that we do have.
But it is a journey.
It is a journey, yeah.
And Jake, what about you and your wife?
Yeah, we had been trying for almost 6 years to have kids, and we went through the IVF process and were unsuccessful the first couple times through IVF, and we were finally successful, and it got to be 30 weeks. She was 30 weeks, and it was April 13th, 2014. And she went in for just a simple appointment, and they couldn't find a heartbeat. And it was just a complete shock at 32 weeks. And then Addison was delivered the next day. And just a complete shock. I just sold my business and was finalizing a lease on my office, and she had been calling me for over, it was almost an hour she had been calling me, and I was, you know, ignoring the phone calls, and finally was able to look at my phone and rush to the hospital, and just, you know, devastation. So it was very difficult, very difficult.
And yours was, I mean, so shocking, it
right.
sounds like,
yeah.
especially when you were that far along in a pregnancy.
Correct, yeah.
What was that process like then? And we just, you know, we just spoke with our St. Luke's folks, and they were telling us about, you know, the cuddle cots, things like that. What was that process like for you and your wife when you, I mean, she had to deliver the baby. I mean,
yeah.
this is a baby.
Right. Absolutely. I remember running into the hospital, and my wife's a NICU nurse, and so I have a familiarity of the hospital, but my mind wasn't working. I didn't know what floor she was on. My brain wasn't processing, and I figured I didn't have time for the elevator, so I started running the stairs, and somehow ran into a doctor, and he actually escorted me to my wife's room, because I was just in a state of shock. And kind of that process, the cuddle cot wasn't yet available, but we had a great team of nurses and doctors there that just gave us tremendous support, some which we're still in contact with today. Which has been amazing. Luckily, our families are local, and we had a great support system there. But still, just that immense shock is something you can't get over, or you know, or understand
right.
really. So,
and Courtney, with your losses, I mean, having lost a baby at the 21-week mark, and then, as they call it, a miscarriage at 9 weeks, you know, a loss is a loss. But what was it like? How did people react, I guess, when you were visibly pregnant at 21 weeks? But sometimes at 9 weeks, no one may know but you and your husband.
Mm-hmm.
So what was that process like with how people reacted to it? Because I think sometimes people don't know what to do. They don't know what to say. And especially if that pregnancy hasn't been shared.
Yeah. definitely just family and close friends, you know, were there for us with my son's loss. His name's Dre, because they knew I was pregnant. But yeah, the second loss at 9 weeks, that was different. You know, Dre was a live birth, and so he has a birth certificate, and he lived for 2 hours, and I saw his heart beating in his chest, and, you know, he died in my arms. And then with my miscarriage, I had a DNC afterwards and didn't, you know, ever get a chance to see or hold my daughter. And so that was just different. For a long time, I didn't have a name for her, because my bond as the mother who carried both of these babies was a lot different, too. And so the grief was a little bit different, not just from my own perspective, but even like my husband, and not a lot of people knew about the third pregnancy. And so, you know, to lose it at 9 weeks, you know, there wasn't as much people involved in that
right.
as far as support.
I'm speaking with Jake Engelhorn and Courtney Wyatt. They are parents who have both experienced miscarriage, stillbirth, and infant loss. And it was pregnancy awareness loss this last week, hence why we're talking about this subject. And I want to ask both of you about things that helped and maybe things that did not help. Because I believe people's intentionality is usually always very good, but the execution is sometimes poor and off.
Yeah.
So what, you know, Jake, what helped? What didn't help?
Yeah. I think, like what Courtney said, I think any loss is a very lonely time, no matter what, no matter if you have family, friends, support systems, it's always a lonely time. Kind of to reflect and kind of think about the whole journey, you know, whether it was an early loss or a late loss, it's a lonely time. And it really means a lot. Just a simple, whether it's a simple text, a simple note, simple phone call, just thinking about you, you know, those simple words, that means a lot. It really does. A lot of times, for us and for myself and my wife, we almost reclused a little bit from everything. I don't remember that whole next year. It was a fog. And, but I do remember the people that stepped up, that left things on our doorstep, that made the, you know, intentional phone call to check in on us, and those type of things that really helped, and that really sticks out in my mind of what helped during that time.
And Courtney, what about you?
Yeah, my friends and family who weren't afraid to say my son's name really helped. Yeah. And I learned quickly who I could turn to when I was having a bad day. Mm-hmm. And what didn't help was the silence of it. That hurts more than just the pain of what you're suffering is when people don't acknowledge your child. And I know people, they don't know what to say, but I mean, it's as simple as, you know, asking if you named your child or mm-hmm. if you did something special with the remains, because most people have a very beautiful story of what they do
right.
with their remains.
And, you know, and when we started this conversation, you know, you said, I have three children.
Mm-hmm.
And we always get that question, right? How many kids do you have?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And is that a difficult question?
It is. It just happened 2 weekends ago at my son's soccer game. A woman I was talking to has two boys, and we were talking about how high energy boys are. And she said, oh, he needs a brother. And I was like, I just didn't say anything. But yeah, those comments are sometimes mm-hmm. I say, you know, well, this is what happened to me. And sometimes I don't feel like putting that person in an awkward place.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting about both of you as well is what you've done since then. Courtney, you are very involved in a support group. Talk to me a little bit about that, because you're actually one of the leaders of this group.
Yes. So Share of Idaho, there's two chapters here in the Treasure Valley, one sponsored by St. Luke's that meets the third Monday of every month. And then St. Alphonsus sponsors one as well that meets the first Tuesday of every month. And I started going to that group right away after, within a month of my first loss. And I got a lot out of that community because it was a safe place for me to go and tell my story and say my son's name mm-hmm. in an environment where I knew that I wasn't going to be putting anybody off or whatever.
Right.
And I kind of went on and off for a couple years through my two losses and the infertility. And it was actually on the 1 year anniversary of my miscarriage, I went, and that was when I met Erica, Jake's kind of partner with the Little Joys Remembrance Foundation. It was right after her loss, and it was so raw. And I just kind of triggered with me being almost 3 years into my grief at that point that I might have something to give back to the pregnancy loss community. And so 2 years ago, the woman who was running the share group at St. Luke's wanted to step down. And so myself and another mother, lost mother, stepped up mm-hmm. to co-lead that group. And it's just been a really special gift from my babies as a way to remember them and honor them.
And Jake, what about you? I mean, as a dad, mm-hmm. you know, so much of what we talk about, and I think so much of the support is around supporting the mother.
Right.
What has that process been like for you as a dad? And what have you done, you know, to make sure that there is a space for dad?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And for me, right after the loss, I knew I just had to take action. I just, for probably about 6 months, I kind of suppressed everything and, you know, focused on my wife. And I remember at about month 4 or 5, what about you? You know, she said, what about you? And that's when everything started coming out. And I knew I just had to take action. And so getting involved in the community here, I met Erica and at a different organization, and that dissolved, and she expressed interest in pursuing Little Joys, which provides cuddle cots to hospitals. And it's been great. It's been great being kind of a voice for the fathers, for the dads. We're in the process of starting a dad's group on Facebook, which is a support group, you know, for dads to express their feelings, express their emotions, because, you know, we have those too. And it can be difficult to kind of let those mm-hmm. loose, but it's important to get those out. And hopefully we can kind of cultivate a community of dads that yeah. can support each other.
How critical is it that we talk about this, but also as a parent who's gone through loss, that you're able to have a voice?
It's pretty important, but for me, it varies on mm-hmm. situation and day to day, depending on how I feel. And, you know, there's some instances where you know, feel sturdy and I can share and talk about my story. And then there's other times where it's just really personal and not willing to open up.
So it's knowing that too, right? Mm-hmm. As someone who is in your life, right? Is noticing those cues and understanding mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think of, as, you know, my parents, they have pictures of my daughter who we lost on their wall. And that means so much to me. That's so sweet. But they also, you know, people around me, they recognize, okay, when is Jake and his wife, when are they able to talk about it? We kind of engage the different cues. But it's important to, especially for me in the healing process, to constantly talk about it. It's been really helpful. And I think, you know, for those with people around them who've experienced loss, it's important to kind of give those people a voice and let them be able to talk and share their emotions.
Well, I appreciate both of you being able to talk about this today. I know it's not an easy subject, but so many people have gone through this type of loss. So to just give voice to it today, I hope there are people listening who have been helped by it. So thank you so much. My guests today, Jake Engelhorn and Courtney Wyatt, thank you so much.
Thank you.